Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Christogenos with my usual guest host, Pastor William Fink. And we're in our continuing series on the Gospel of John. Last time we left off, I believe, right at the very end of John chapter 8.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and which is the one of my favorite chapters of the New Testament, because it really identifies the Edomite Jews for who and what they are. And one of the common features of the Gospel of John is the fact that mainstream Christianity ignores it. And they especially ignore John chapter 8, because there's very little about these people that Yahshua Messiah has anything good to say about them. And, of course, throughout the entire four Gospels, and which is true of both Paul and the other authors, the apostles themselves, who don't have anything good to say about these Edomites either. Okay? So basically what's happening is mainstream Judeo-Christianity simply ignores all of the condemnations of these people and pretends that they don't exist anymore, okay? But they do accept the Jewish claim that they are Judahites and Israelites of the Old Testament, and therefore we must bow to them, and even though most of them believe in dispensationalism, which throws the Old Testament completely out the window, and now it's all a gospel of love and race mixing. that's all what they teach, okay? So comparing the Gospel of John to what is commonly taught in all modern Judeo-Christian churches, it's worlds apart. It's 180 degrees apart. And, they're just lying to us, and they're ignoring some of the most valuable teaching that Yahshua Messiah and certainly the Apostle John wrote down. So one of my pet peeves about Judeo-Christianity is their failure, their absolute failure to distinguish between Edomites and Judahites, okay? And so typically when these so-called teachers, when these gospel commentators talk about, well, why does Jesus reserve such, those who do talk about this subject, such venom for these evil Jews? And then on the other hand, he turns around and there's other Jews, so-called, that he has no problems with, And so the usual explanation is, well, there's good Jews and there's bad Jews, okay? And the bad Jews are the ones who didn't convert to Christianity, and the good Jews are the ones who did convert to Christianity. And that's your, basic explanation. Yet that does not address the fact that these evil Jews are almost always Edomites.
Well, that theology is necessitated by the fact that they refuse to recognize any distinction between nation and race at all.
Right.
That they refuse to acknowledge or see or admit that most of the people in Judea are not Israelites.
Right.
And that's, contrary to all history.
That's right.
And that's, they take passages like John 10:26. And they teach them absolutely backwards.
Uh-huh.
That they use some kind of Freudian perversion to twist those passages inside out.
Yes.
Christ said, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And they teach that you are not my sheep because you do not believe.
Right.
And they teach the exact opposite of what he said.
Right.
And that's just one of the most blatant of places. They do it often.
Right. Everything, there's only one thing that matters to modern Judeo-Christianity, and that's the difference between believers and unbelievers, okay? But even there, that distinction falls apart, because the vast majority of the same churches also teach that everyone gets saved, no matter what, okay? So it doesn't really matter if you believe or if you don't believe. Ultimately, we're all forgiven, according to their philosophy.
Well, that's because they want quarters and dollars in those baskets from as many people at as many occasions as possible.
Right.
So they're teaching a gospel of their belly, just like Paul said that they'd be teaching.
Right. It's a very self-serving gospel, and they avoid the judgment day, too. I mean, there's very, very little teaching on the judgment day from the mainstreamers. Almost nothing. You used to have fire and brimstone where even if they were universalists, they would say, "Well, you got to believe, and you got to, you know, you got to do this and got to do that, and otherwise you get burnt." But now they don't even teach that. Now they're all teaching, "Well, you just wait around and you get raptured." So you know, it's become a total nonsensical doctrine that avoids the actual scriptures like the plague. That's really what's happening.
Well, the people that go there and listen probably deserve what they're hearing.
Yeah. Right. That's right. They want to have their ears tickled. Yes. Okay, well, let's get into chapter 9, verse 1. "And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?'" Now, that's a very interesting question. And a lot of people who have referred to this suggest that it's a reference to reincarnation, because this man must have sinned in a previous lifetime. Otherwise, how could he have sinned at all? Okay, because he was born blind from birth. Okay.
Well, right, but those people don't read verse 3.
Okay. Do you have any comments? Well, let me just read verse 3. "Jesus answered, 'Neither has this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him.'" Okay? So that sounds like, well, if that's the case, then is he being punished for something he didn't do?
No, he's saying, you know, we all exist at the pleasure of Yahweh.
Okay.
As the Old Testament tells us.
Okay.
That he created us for his pleasure. We all exist for his purpose, not for our purpose.
Yes.
But we don't get born into the world to expect a normal, healthy life and to be great football players or great this or great that, or have an equal opportunity to collect huge salaries. But we get born into the world for the purpose of Yahweh.
Right.
And the manner in which we're born into the world is the manner in which he wants us.
Right. And we do get rewarded after all. If we wind up paying the loss.
Right. I mean, 2 Corinthians 4:17, "For the present lightness of our tribulation and exceedingly surpassing eternal abundance of honor is earned by us."
Yes.
"We considering the things being seen, but the things not being seen."
Mm-hmm.
And the things being seen are temporary, but the things not being seen are eternal.
Yes.
In this life, we're to serve the purposes of God.
Yes.
And this man was born blind so that Yahshua Christ could make an example.
Right, right.
And that's the bottom line. That's exactly why he was born blind, so that God could make an example of him.
Yes.
And I don't think that and I mentioned it last week, these three chapters where Yahshua Christ, he identifies the enemy in John chapter 8.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He heals a man blind from birth in John chapter 9.
Uh-huh.
And in John chapter 10, he tells, you know, it's the great discourse of the sheep and the shepherd, and he's the shepherd of the sheep, and that whole, again, telling the enemy that they're not his sheep.
Right, right. Oh,
okay,
right.
And all of this is for a reason. And it's, there's a lot of Old Testament scripture, and I'd like to cite a couple.
Okay.
And I'll just do it in brief, but out of Isaiah 29:15-22, I'll read verse 18. "And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book," which is what Yahshua Christ quoted in his whole ministry, "and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." When we listen to the words of Christ, our eyes are opened.
Yeah.
Isaiah 35:4-6, I'll read verse 5. "Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped." Isaiah 42:7, "To open the blind eyes and bring out the prisoners from the prison."
Yes.
"And them that sit in darkness out of the prison house." In other words, there's a whole series of prophecies that Yahweh would open the eyes of the blind. And some of those prophecies are in connection with his manifestation here on earth, like that's Isaiah 29:15-22. So this is prophesied in the Old Testament of Christ.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
No
Jew ever fulfilled any of those prophecies.
The physical healing of a blind man, which happens a few times in the New Testament, is only symbolic of the healing of the blindness of the nation once they follow the gospel.
Right. right.
and believe the gospel.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's also something else going on here, too, that namely each of us as individual Israelites must accept the possibility and even likelihood, as in the case of this blind man, that sometimes we have to accept upon ourselves the sins of others, because and this helps them to be able to see, just as Yahshua Messiah did for us. We occasionally have to do that for our brothers and sisters, and that's why he told us somebody asked him how many times should you be insulted by your kinsmen, before you can lash back, and his answer was 70 times 7, which is quite a large number of insults, right? But
well,
yeah.
Right, for each time that kinsman is repentant, I mean.
Right, right, yeah. I don't know if they can repent that many times and sin again that many times, right?
Well, there's at least that many Obama voters repentant right now.
Right, right. So to a certain extent, we have to accept, as Israelites, a bit of the common burden of our own people. Okay?
Well, definitely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's part of the teaching, and that's what. That's the same thing that goes for the body of Christ. We are the body of Christ. And, the spleen has to pick up for the liver. it doesn't stop working because the liver shut down. The spleen has to keep on working, So we all have to keep on doing our fair share. And if somebody doesn't pick up his fair share, then, maybe it's my turn to lift him up and walk a mile in his moccasins. I forget what the term is in the New Testament where they had to carry each other's burdens, carry the other person's cross, for a while, okay? So there's certainly that going on, and we shouldn't shy away from that. We shouldn't feel like we're being put upon, even though we are, when that situation comes to us, okay? All right, so verse 4, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night comes when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent, S-E-N-T. He went his way therefore and washed and came seeing. The neighbors therefore and they which before had seen that he was blind said, is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, it is like him, but he said, I am he. Therefore said they to him, how were your eyes opened? He answered and said, a man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Then said they to him, where is he? He said, I know not. Now here we go. Here's the Pharisees again. I just got bumped off the screen again. Anyway, verse 13.
I would like to comment on a few things.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
I mean, well, first, all of this is symbolic of the gospel opening our eyes. And,
yeah.
And where his neighbors and kinsmen said, is this him or is this somebody like him? And when your eyes are open to the gospel, basically, and you start coming to the truth of the gospel and what it really means, your friends and kinsmen, they're going to wonder if it's really you.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
are you gone crazy?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's a profound analogy.
Yes.
And I'd like to comment on verse 5. Christ said, whenever I may be in a society, I am the light of society. That goes right back to John 1, 4 through 5. And him was the life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in darkness, yet the darkness comprehends it not.
Mm-hmm.
And something struck me today. I was reading Genesis chapter 1.
Okay.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. This was the first day.
Uh-huh.
And the lights in the heavens, the sun and the moon and the stars, they weren't created until
that's
the fourth
right.
day.
That's right.
And I think that's an analogy, too.
Right.
That truth and falseness were created first.
Yeah.
And he is the light and the truth.
Yes.
And that's an analogy, and that struck me.
Yeah, and that's why those days can't be literal 24-hour days.
Well, absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the grasses were created before the sun and the moon appeared in the sky. So
yes, right.
The previous day, so how could grass grow without sunlight? You know, so we have to take these things into consideration, right? Oh, absolutely. It's a metaphorical statement that there was, you know, comprehension and incomprehension, you know. And again, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. You have to, in order to know Yahweh, you really have to obey his law, because you cannot just believe from your own human perspective and expect to know anything. you can't operate that way. There's true knowledge, you know, and there's preachers preaching. There's a difference between those two things, right?
Well, the shepherds get nothing but condemnation in the gospel all the time. I was reading, and we'll get to this in the next chapter. I was reading Ezekiel 34 in preparation for this, because it goes hand in hand with John 10. And the shepherds just get slammed.
Yeah.
That they do all the time. They do throughout the gospel.
Right. They become full of self-importance, and they preach and preach and preach and love to hear themselves preach, and then nothing important gets said or nothing worthwhile gets said. And, yeah, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, we're constantly being warned about false shepherds and false priests. Okay. We definitely have to. And there's another aspect of the New Testament that the mainstream Judaism totally ignore. The fact that.
Well, right. But reading Ezekiel 34 and like Isaiah 55 or 56, I think, and a lot of the things that are said about the shepherds, who would want to be a pastor or a leader among the people?
You better watch your P's and Q's, you know, because they get a double portion of wrath.
Right, and James said, among you there should not be many teachers, because they will receive the greater punishment.
Right, exactly. So you better watch your P's and Q's if you presume to be a teacher, yes. Okay, verse 12. Then said they, now of course we're talking about the Pharisees again, and the Pharisees always make things interesting whenever they show up. Verse 13, they brought to the Pharisees him that before was blind, and of course it was on the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again, the Pharisees also asked him. It seems like they're always on the lookout for him on the Sabbath day, right?
Well, right. And, you know, I was thinking of that when I read this afternoon in preparation for this program.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, he had a greater chance of healing people on the Sabbath day, because that's when people gathered. That's when people came out of their homes to go to the assembly halls.
They're in the public, and they're near the river, you know, for baptisms and what have you. Yeah, that's when everybody's out and about. Yeah, yeah, resting and relaxing. Yeah, exactly. So then again, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said to them, "He put clay upon my eyes, and I washed, and do see." Therefore said some of the Pharisees, "This man is not of God, because he keeps not the Sabbath day." Others said, "How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles?" And there was division among them. Indeed, there was. Okay, now I remember we talked about this a little bit last on one of the previous shows about what does the Old Testament actually forbid us to do on the Sabbath day. So I went onto a Jewish website to see what they had to say about it. Okay. And this website had 39 different things that are forbidden on the Sabbath day, right? Okay, well, only two of those 39 actually reference the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's the way it is. And I really only think that one item is forbidden on the Sabbath day, or possibly two, because the second one falls hand in hand with the first anyway.
Yeah.
And that's the... to do labor for hire.
Right.
That you shouldn't do any labor for hire on a Sabbath day.
Yeah,
and so you shouldn't go shopping or anything like that. But if the Sabbath were kept and enforced properly, you wouldn't be able to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they had a preparation day.
Okay.
Because they had no refrigeration.
Right.
And they had to prepare all their meals in advance.
Yeah.
For the Sabbath, because they had, you know, they didn't have the the creature comforts that we have today.
Well, this rabbi quoted one verse which prohibited, you know, sowing and reaping on the Sabbath day. You know,
well, that would fall into labor for hire,
right?
I mean, you're not going to go out and
what you do
and
for
reap
your daily living.
Just the bread that you need for one day, for one loaf, you know?
Right. But I thought as I read that, that doesn't apply to the Jews anyway.
Yeah, right. They never sowed nor reaped.
So out of 39 reasons, only one that he mentioned was scriptural, and that was, making a fire, on the Sabbath, and presuming that that also says, means that you can't do any cooking, but I think, you know, on the preparation day, because in those days, making a fire was a real chore. I mean, making a fire from scratch, okay? So people kept their fires lit most of the time. Because, you know, they didn't have, you know, lighters like we do today.
Well, no,
or
they
gas stoves, what have you. You're right. So it was a lot of work to actually build a fire if you had to start one from scratch.
Right. But to me, the best rule of thumb to tell, you know, when people ask me about the Sabbath is not to engage in labor for hire or in merchandising and trade, things like that.
Yeah, yeah, whatever it is you do for a living, you should avoid that, yeah. And then we had the so-called blue laws, which I remember in the 50s.
They had them into the 70s in Jersey in some counties.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. And, of course, commerce and mammon have taken over that, you know. And we had no problem getting along on Sundays without beer. We just bought it the day before, right?
Well, when I was a kid, the only thing with the taverns on Sundays was that they couldn't open until noon.
Right.
But they all opened.
Yeah.
They just wanted to force people into church.
That's right. They want.
You know, they didn't want the taverns competing
with
the church.
With the pastors. Right, exactly. So that's what that's really all about, right? It has nothing to do with piety.
None at all.
Right. Okay, so let me back up to 16, because this, again, we're talking about the hypocrisy of these Pharisees. Therefore, said some of the Pharisees, this man is not of God, because he keeps not the Sabbath day. Others said, how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles?
And well, today, let me just say that today the same Pharisees, they wouldn't approach this from a religious sense, that they would want to track him down to see if the clay was FDA approved.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, to see
exactly.
If he was practicing medicine without a license.
Yeah, again, the legalism. Yeah, with the legalism. In fact, that's what we've got today, big time. The Jews practice legalism absolutely big time, and one of the, you know, ways that they get around the Sabbath for themselves is that they have these little strings called eruvs, E-R-U-V, that they stretch out beyond the, you know, because in some Orthodox sects, you're not even allowed to go out of your house, okay? So what they do is they put this eruv around the property to extend the limits of the property so that you can walk further away from your house than without the string, right? Okay.
Right, it's incredible.
Yeah, and of course, that's not in the Bible. There's nothing in the Bible about strings extending your property, nothing.
No, it's a mockery of the law of Yahweh.
It's total mockery, yeah. And so these are the people who are presuming to judge Yahshua Messiah that he violates the Sabbath. It's incredible.
Well, they'll put the string, you know, from the pole in front of their house, and then they'll go sacrifice chickens, drink the blood, and rape 9-year-old girls.
That's right. Yeah, and then sell them as sex slaves. Exactly. That's what they'll do. Now, of course, they haven't broken the Sabbath because their Sabbath was Saturday. Verse 17. They said to the blind man again, what say you of him that he has opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. Verse 18, but the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. The Pharisees are trying to, they haven't tried bribing him yet, okay? But by what means now he sees, we know not. Or who has opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age. Ask him. He shall speak for himself, okay? But the Pharisees were hoping that to catch him in a lie, obviously. Verse 22, these words spoke his parents because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Whoa! I wonder how long that law was in effect.
Well, right, it was excommunication, basically.
Well, what do you think here, Bill? Was this something that the Pharisees just conjured up because they knew Christ was walking around the territory? Or is this something that they had long ago established?
Well, he had been, this is close to 3 years into his ministry already.
Okay, yeah, so they probably would have come up with this recently.
Right, we've already had several Passovers, and mm-hmm. We're going to see that this is December.
Yes.
Of 6 months before he was crucified that this
okay.
is occurring.
Okay, because it says they had agreed. It doesn't say they had passed the law. And, of course, there is...
Well, right, they had to hear about him.
Uh-huh.
And I don't, you know, for such an excommunication, I really don't have a historical reference.
Okay.
You know, I don't think Josephus mentions anything like this.
Right.
That they would put people out of the synagogues. But this is just an agreement between the Pharisees.
So they had agreed among themselves that they would do this, and to hell with the law.
Right, they had to hear of him.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like if anybody follows those Paul bashers, they should be put out of the forum. It's the same deal.
Right. Yeah, look, we can agree on that, right? Verse 23. Therefore said his parents, he is of age. Ask him. Then again called they the man that was blind and said to him, give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. Of course, speaking of Yahshua, he answered and said, whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Then said they to him again, what did he do to you? How opened he your eyes? And, you know, they're trying to find out more detail so they can catch him in a Sabbath violation. He answered them, I have told you already, and you did not hear. He's getting impatient with these Pharisees, right? Wherefore would you hear it again? Will you also be his disciples? Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. Oh, really? Didn't Jesus say to them, if you had believed Moses, you would believe me?
Well, absolutely. And Moses spoke of him. So.
That's right.
So that's...
Yeah. So, again, another phony claim. Of course, the Jews today still claim to be disciples of Moses, even though they disobey all the laws and make up new laws constantly. Verse 29, we know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from where he is. The man answered and said to them, why herein is a marvelous thing that you know not from where he is, and yet he has opened my eyes. Very good. So this blind man was, you know, he wasn't backing up. He wasn't backing down. He was letting them have it. He was being sarcastic toward him. Verse 31, now we know that God hears not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and does his will, him he hears. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? Of course, nothing like it had ever happened.
Well, right, and if the Pharisees had really known the scripture, they'd have known what Isaiah said.
Yeah,
because it's in I read a few passages, but it's in Isaiah 29, 35, 42, and Matthew 11:5 quotes it. The blind receive their sight and the lame walk.
Yes,
and they would have known that there was something up from Scripture, and that something was happening here.
Yes,
but they really didn't know the Scripture.
Right, yeah, and this is proof that they didn't. You know, and even today the Jews don't. In fact, it's very commonly misunderstood that the Jews actually know the scriptures, but they don't.
They don't. They absolutely don't.
Yeah. The average Jew doesn't read the Bible at all. They know even less about the Old Testament than New Testament Christians. and the Pharisees, the rabbis, know nothing of the Old Testament. They only read the Old Testament in order to refute it in favor of the Talmud. Okay. So let me read verse 32 again. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind except in the scriptures, as you correctly point out, verse 33, if this man were not of God, he could do nothing. They answered and said to him, you were altogether born in sins, thereby accusing him. And do you teach us? How dare you teach us? We're the rabbis. And they cast him out. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe on the Son of God? And he answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he that talks with you. So, John Hagee, pay attention.
Well, absolutely.
Verses 36 and 37, he's saying, I am Messiah. No doubt about it. Verse 38.
Well, he said that back when he said that he was a light in the society.
Oh, right. Yeah. But that was too subtle, Bill. This is right out there, okay? I am he. He said that to the Syrophoenician woman, too. Okay? Verse 38. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Verse 39. And Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. I love it. Because obviously the Pharisees have eyes to see the physical world, but not reality.
well, basically, they claimed to know the law and the prophets.
Right.
And obviously, they didn't.
Yes.
And if you claim to know the law and the prophets and you don't, and you're in violation of them, well, then you're going to be guilty of the sin.
Yes.
You have no excuse. You're without excuse.
Yeah.
If you're a lawyer and claim to know the tax code and get caught not paying your taxes, I mean, what's your excuse?
Exactly. Our attorney general.
Well, right.
Yeah, exactly. Obama found a good one, didn't he? Verse 40. And some of the Pharisees, which were with him, heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? They got offended, didn't they? Verse 41. Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you should have no sin.
Well, that's it.
Yeah,
if they were blind, they would have been put off Israelites.
Right.
Who didn't know the law and the prophets, didn't make a claim to. Their sin wouldn't be accounted to them.
Right. They would have been innocent because of ignorance. Right. But he's telling them, you know you're doing wrong, and you still pretend to be good. But now you say, we see. Therefore, your sin remains. Okay? He's basically telling them, you're liars, you're hypocrites, you're phonies. Chapter 10, verse 1. Verily, verily, I say to you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. Well, obviously, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, I don't want to include the Essenes in this because we don't know enough about them. But obviously, it's a trap for all teachers who, the Jews and the Judeo-Christians who are constantly teaching false doctrine. They're climbing up some other way. They're not using the scriptures. They're not using the scriptures at all. So they pretend to, and they're really good at pretending it. Verse 2, but he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. It reminds me of the verse in the Old Testament that says that Yahweh will claim his children one by one.
Well, right, and I'd like to make a few comments here.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of places in Scripture where the leaders of the people of Israel are referred to as shepherds.
Yes.
However, there's one place, and I believe that Yahshua here lays claim to being Yahweh, and rightfully. And Jeremiah 31, 10 to 11 is one place I could cite to demonstrate that.
Okay.
Hear the word of Yahweh, O ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him, as a shepherd does his flock. For Yahweh has redeemed Jacob and ransomed him from the hand of him that was stronger than he. And this is, you know, Yahshua is making this claim to be the shepherd.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'd like to, yeah, you know, this whole thing about Israel and sheep.
Uh-huh.
This isn't, you know, a lot of mainstream Christians, because they discard the Old Testament, would never see that this is, the whole sheep analogy pertains only to the ancient Israelites that were driven off from their homeland. And that story is clearest in Ezekiel chapter 34.
Yeah.
And I'd like to read verses 1 through 6.
Okay.
And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh God unto the shepherds, Woe be to the shepherds of Israel that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? Ye eat the fat, and ye clothe you with the wool. Ye kill them that are fed, but you feed not the flock.
Mm-hmm.
The diseased you have not strengthened, neither have you healed that which was sick, neither have you bound up that which was broken,
yes.
Neither have you brought again that which was driven away,
yes.
Neither have you sought that which was lost, but with force and with cruelty have ye ruled them. And they were scattered because there is no shepherd, and they became meat to all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill. Yeah, my flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and none did search or seek after them. And then reading, you know, Jeremiah 31 after that he would search and seek after them. However, Ezekiel 33 is speaking to the Israelites that are already deported. He's speaking to the Israelites that they are the lost sheep.
Yeah.
And the entire Ezekiel chapter 34 is a discourse about those already deported Israelites.
Yes.
And Ezekiel is writing from the captivity. He's writing from Assyria,
mm-hmm.
up to 90 years after the deportations began or
right.
longer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. By the way, there was an email discussion. I don't want to bring up Joseph's scepter unnecessarily. However, some people don't seem to realize that much of the tribe of Judah and much of the tribe of Benjamin were also taken into captivity with, you know, the 10 tribes, the 10 northern
tribes. Well, right. It's not only much of the tribe, but according to the Assyrian records
mm-hmm.
and according to the Bible, the only thing that was left by the Assyrians were the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
Right.
And that's like taking that's like taking all of New York and New Jersey and leaving behind New York City.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and there's 24 million people in New York and New Jersey, and only 8 million of them are in New York City.
Right.
Or 32 million people.
Right.
It's they took 46, according to Assyrian inscriptions, all right, Sennacherib's actual inscriptions that we dug out of the ground. And I have copies, you know, of these inscriptions
mm-hmm.
in ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament, published by Princeton in 1969. According to Sennacherib, he took 46 fenced cities of Judah.
Right.
Now, a fenced city is a walled city.
Right.
And that he's not even talking about the towns and villages and all that.
Yeah.
And the farm estates and everything else he took.
Exactly.
He's only enumerating the fenced cities. And it was well over 200,000 people in one inscription alone.
Yeah.
And he said that he left Hezekiah penned up like a bird in a cage.
Right.
In other words, he did everything except take Jerusalem.
That's right. That's right.
And that means he took all of Benjamin and Judah.
Yeah, yeah.
Except the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And of course, anybody who fled first.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure there were escapees.
Right. So those people were definitely added to the 10 northern tribes.
And that's what the Bible states.
Yes.
And that's what the inscription states, yes. That he carried them off.
Yeah.
And put them where he had put the children, the
house
of Omri.
Exactly. You know, but they, my understanding is they still kept their separate tribal identity, but they became part of the, you know, 12 tribes of Israel again.
well, you know, Herodotus and all the Greek writers, they talk about a tribe of Scythians called the royal Scythians.
Okay.
And they distinguish amongst them.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of other historical evidence that,
yeah.
And it seems to me that those royal Scythians were amongst the northernmost of the Scythians.
Yeah.
And that they probably became the Utahi or the Jutes.
Uh-huh.
That's my opinion. I can't prove that.
Yeah.
But I can prove that the royal Scythians existed. I mean, it's in the old books. And,
right.
and they talked about them all the time. And that the tribe of the royal Scythians were seen as a, you know,
yeah.
the royal tribe. That's why they called them that.
Yeah. I'm basically addressing the opinion of John Knight. I don't know if he's listening tonight or if he even listens at all. But he seems to think that the House of Judah was not part of the lost sheep of the House of Israel.
Okay. Well, a lot of people miss that. The House of Judah was part of the lost sheep of the House of
okay.
Israel. They were whenever you see Israel, you have to include Judah in prophecy. Judah's one of the tribes of Israel.
Yes.
They can't be separated from that.
Yes.
And scripturally, and I cited this last week, I have two scriptures that prove that Judah was divorced as well as Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me qualify
okay.
that. The remnant wasn't divorced. They were allowed to return.
Yes.
And there are other prophecies where Yahweh explains that he needs this remnant to provide an altar.
Right.
Okay? But let's look at this. You know, in the New Testament, there's Anna, the prophetess, at the birth of Christ. This is in the book of Luke, in
yeah.
the Gospel of Luke. And she's of the tribe of Asher.
Uh-huh.
And she's in the temple keeping the law, and she's a prophetess.
Right.
So was she divorced? The people that weren't driven away weren't divorced. It says that he left a remnant in the land.
Yeah, right. So the people that were driven away.
They want to take that word divorced
too literally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you know, it's I have it in Jeremiah 33:24.
Well, okay, yeah. So
the two families which Yahweh has chosen, has he not cast them off.
Mm-hmm.
He cast them both
yeah.
off.
Right.
And Zechariah 10:6 supports
except
that.
For the returnees. And,
well, right.
Yes.
And they're the remnant, but everybody else was divorced.
Yeah.
If you were cast out of the land,
right.
driven away from your homeland,
yeah.
you were divorced from Yahweh.
Yeah.
You're alienated from Yahweh.
Yeah, and as I proved in my article, The Origin of Talmudism, it's not true that the returnees from Babylon began practicing Talmudism or Judaism. They instituted a golden age of Mosaism, okay, and they struggled mightily to keep their separate racial and religious identity from all those people attacking them. You know, they were hard pressed to maintain their race, religion, and culture, but they did a fantastic job. The temple was still there. Josephus himself says his family is of one of the first course of the 24 courses. So those 24 courses were still intact. Okay.
Well, right. And let me say that, you know, when all Israel was taken away, along with most of Judah, Jeremiah was chosen to write and told to write a bill of divorcement for Judah.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, for Israel.
Sure, for Israel.
Now, Jeremiah is a Levite by tribe.
Okay.
Of Judah.
Right.
He's of Judah. And he's told to write a bill of divorcement for Israel. But,
yeah.
you know, when Judah was taken away, who was left to write the bill of divorce?
Right. Yeah.
You know what? The point was moot by then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it didn't really matter by then. It was a done deal. It was over with.
Yeah, yeah. So all 12 tribes were part of the divorce. And the people, and because also it incorporates Paul's statement where he's falsely accused of saying, to the Jews first, you know, and then to the Gentiles. But, of course, he means to Judah first. Yahshua had to come to Judah first, and then to the dispersion. That's how that passage should be translated. And that's what it really means, right? So even though the remnant wasn't divorced, and they had to stay behind, otherwise he couldn't come to Judah first. Those Judahites had to stay there, okay? So none of this is contradictory. It all fulfills prophecy. Okay, let's continue here. Let's see. Where was I? Do you remember where did I leave off?
We're at 10:6, 10:7.
10:6. Okay, a parable. Okay, let me. I remember now. Okay, Let me just back up to verse 2. But he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. He comes in as one of the remnant of the house of Judah. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. And when he puts forth his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Okay, so here we're being told again, only the true Judahites and Israelites will know his voice, will know it when they hear it. Verse 5, and a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spoke Jesus to them, but they understood not what things they were which he spoke to them. Then said Jesus to them again, verily, verily, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, shall he be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. Now, of course, he's contrasting himself to these scribes and Pharisees that are standing right in front of him. Isn't that what he's doing? That they're coming in to kill and to steal and to destroy?
Well, absolutely. That's what, they come in to loot and to pillage, and they can't come in by force.
Right.
So they come in like they came into America in the 1890s. They infiltrate.
Yes.
And as soon as they infiltrate successfully, they seek leadership positions, and they use guile to get them,
yes.
and they destroy the flock.
Yeah, yeah. And the sheep just don't get it that they're being preyed upon by the very priesthood that they worship.
Well, right. And you know, the same thing happened nationally here and well, in all the European countries.
That's right.
And they couldn't get into Russia, so they financed the taking of it.
Right.
They couldn't get into Germany. They were thrown out. They were in and they were thrown out. So they destroyed Germany and they used us to do it.
Right.
Because, and they were able to do that because they infiltrated us and the England, you know, Britain.
Yes.
And they were successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they used those countries where they were successful to destroy the countries where they weren't.
Yeah, and so this is not just Yahshua is not just telling the story of how these scribes and Pharisees operate. He's telling a parable of the 2,000 years hence.
It's history. It's the same pattern over and over again.
That's right. The Jews that fled from Jerusalem infiltrated the Roman Empire, became the moneylenders, and instigated the Christian persecutions. Okay, as who's the guy that wrote the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire?
Gibbon.
He states that Poppaea was a tool of the Jews.
Absolutely. They would have definitely used her. I mean, it's only obvious. They do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And then the next major incident after Rome, we have the Spanish, the Muranos, Jews pretending to be Christians and killing the sheep there. Okay.
Well, I would think that the Borgias and the Demedicis were all Jews.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And they took over the Catholic Church right around the same time.
Right, yeah. They were kind of in and out of the Catholic Church, you know, in various ways. Some people say that the Pope who instigated the Crusades was a Jew, and he simply did it for economic reasons, okay?
Well, that could be. I don't have documentary evidence of that, but I'm not. I wouldn't dispute it outright.
Yeah,
but the Borgias supplied one pope, but the De Medici supplied three.
Uh-huh, right.
And De Medici, it basically identifies them as medical doctors.
Right.
And that's a trade all throughout the Christian era, you know, from the dawn of the legalization of Christianity that was basically outlawed.
Uh-huh.
And only the Jews were doctors,
right?
And the nobles used them, but the common people couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that identifies who they were right there to me. And then they went from being doctors to being bankers.
Yes.
And they were a banking family that bought the papacy.
Yeah.
And once they got into the papacy, they legalized interest.
Yeah.
They legalized usury.
Exactly. And that's again the Jews. That's the Jews doing. Guess 12. What is the definition of crypto-Jew? A crypto-Jew is a Jew who pretends to be not a Jew.
Well, right, but three or four generations down the road, they don't even know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they don't even know it. And guys like Troublemaker that are crypto-Jews don't even know they're Jews.
Okay, I get your point. But after the Spanish Murano incident, then they moved to Poland. They did the same thing to Poland. What was the main city? Warsaw was.
Well,
like,
right, and they went from Spain into Holland and
yeah,
in
Holland, and then yeah, they did it to Germany. They tried to do it to Russia, as you say, but the Tsar wouldn't. He created the Pale, and the Jews had to live in the Pale so that they wouldn't exploit the Russian peasants. Okay, that's why he did that. And of course, then they took over the British Empire. The British Empire is essentially Jewish. Okay. The Sassoons and the Rothschilds created the British Empire, and now they're here in America. That's history, okay? And everywhere they go, to steal, to kill, and to destroy. That's what they do. That's what they do. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep, another prophecy. But he that is a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not. He's talking to these scribes and Pharisees, and there's probably some Sadducees standing around too. Sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches them and scatters the sheep. Okay, so obviously he's talking to these false priests here called scribes and Pharisees. But he's also talking about our modern Judeo-Christian priesthood, isn't he?
Well, right. But he's even talking about, I mean, we got wolves in this forum right now that are trying to scatter the sheep.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that's and a real shepherd would, I mean, I'd hate to tell you what I'd do with him. I've already uttered it a few times.
Right.
I shouldn't let that distract me.
Yes.
But right, it's the good shepherd laid his life down on behalf of the sheep.
Yes.
And that... You know, most of these mainstream pastors and priests, and they flee from confrontation.
Yes.
That they would flee immediately from confrontation.
That's right. Because
that's the last thing they want. They don't lay down their life. It's all CYA, cover your ass.
Yes.
And they'd hide behind a church pew before they ever had any confrontation on behalf of the gospel.
Yeah, yeah. And then they say, oh, I wasn't there. When the wolves came in and tore up the sheep, I wasn't there. That's right. Yeah, it just shows that the fact is that modern Judeo-Christianity, the priesthood, is just as bad as what he's describing here. They really are that bad.
Well, right. They wouldn't look a Jew in the face and tell him that he's evil for denying Christ.
Right.
That they kiss their butts.
That's right.
Look at John Hagee.
Right, exactly. He's the prime example. Yeah. Yeah, and so... When the Jews move in to start scattering the sheep, he gets lost. He's
right, but those pastors should stand up to the Jews and throw them the hell out.
Yeah, right. Well,
and instead they get lost. Right, they get scattered.
Yeah.
None of them will, and that's what the analogy Christ is making, I think.
Yeah, but he that is a hireling, and they got well paid. He gets well paid by the wolves to be a false shepherd. Okay.
Well, right, and this is an analogy, and it's true right down the line.
Yeah, yeah, it just fits these modern pastors, these Judeo-Christian pastors, to a T. Verse
13. Well, right, but I mean, for centuries and centuries and centuries, our people have been caving into the wolves and giving over to the wolves.
Yes.
Well, when they even most of them can't even identify the wolves.
Right. They can't. Our people are still too blind. Obviously, Judeo-Christianity. And the Christian Zionists are perfect examples. Verse 13, the hireling flees because he is a hireling and cares not for the sheep. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd and know my sheep, and I am known of mine. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Okay, prophecies here, folks. And again, these were prophesied that the Messiah would do this. Verse 16, and other sheep I have which are not of this fold. Of course, he's in the city of Jerusalem, speaking primarily to Judahites. some Benjamites and Levites, and probably some Simeonites as well, because the Simeonites got incorporated into Judah. Let me start against verse 16. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also must I bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Okay? So this brings to mind the two sticks prophecy of Ezekiel. Okay? The other sheep being the 10 tribes that were initially taken away. Okay? And we just talked about the great numbers of Judah and Benjamin added to them. And, of course, now here we're talking about Judah. He is among the Judahites here, and the other sheep have to be the dispersion.
Well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this fully proves, you know, there's nobody from any of the other tribes,
right,
except Judah and Benjamin, mentioned in the New Testament.
Right.
It's ridiculous to think that there's any Ephraimites or any Asherites
or any large numbers of them, for sure.
Well, right. There's, you know, like I mentioned, Anna the Asherite, and she knew her tribe, but they were very scarce.
Yes.
And I can actually tell you in history how that happened, because Tyre was never deported, the people on the island.
Uh-huh.
And the island of the Tyrians, that because they were never deported until Alexander's time, that a lot of them dispersed back to the mainland.
Yeah.
In between, you know, in the Persian era,
uh-huh,
before Alexander. And they kept their heritage. That they knew who they were. They always knew who they were.
Yeah.
And they were never deported. They were until Alexander destroyed the island. But that's hundreds of years after the deportations.
Right.
And those people were, you know, some of those, but they were very few. But there were no Ephraimites, and there were no nobody from the tribe of Gad or nobody from the tribe of Reuben,
yes,
ever identified in Palestine after the deportation.
Right, right. It was exclusively the house of Judah, Judah and Benjamin, the two tribes.
Exactly. Right, and that has to be the
right.
You know, these people of the remnant of the tribe of Judah, that's who he's talking about. Yeah, you know, Zechariah 12 says, I will save the tents of Judah first.
Uh-huh, right.
And when we look at the spread of the gospel, the first people outside of Palestine that Paul brought it to was the Illyrians. And they're Judah. And I could show in history that they're Judah.
Okay.
They descended from the Dardanians of Troy. And the Romans received the gospel before Paul had brought it to any of the Greek tribes.
Okay.
And they also descended from the tribe of Darda.
Right.
The Trojans.
Yes.
The Zara Judahites.
Exactly.
So Judah definitely got the gospel first.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And not only Judah in Palestine.
Yes.
But there's no doubt that, you know, yeah, he said he'll save the tent. That means that,
yes,
Judah was to get the gospel first.
Yes.
And it may have a fulfillment in later times also. But only a fool would think he's talking about the Jews.
Right.
Because he's about to identify them here in verse 26 when we get to it.
Yeah. Okay. So let me read verse 16 again, because it is very important. It is a fulfillment of the two sticks prophecy. That, and, of course, James 1:1. To the 12 tribes scattered.
Well, right, and Israel and Judah were, I'm sorry, Israel and Judah were made one, you know, one stick from two with the gospel.
Right, exactly, exactly. Very good. Verse 16 again, and other sheep I have, that is the dispersed sheep of the lost house, tribes of Israel, which are not of this fold, speaking of Judah and Benjamin right here, them also must I bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Beautiful. Verse 17. Therefore does my Father love me, because I lay down my life that I might take it again, predicting his resurrection. Verse 18. No man takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. Now, is he, again, these scribes and Pharisees are standing in front of him, and he knows that they're plotting to kill him. But he's telling them, you can't kill me unless I permit it, unless I permit it to happen. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. Wow, these are powerful statements here. Okay? And he's staying right into the faces of these scribes and Pharisees. And then verse 19. There was a division, therefore, again among the Jews for these sayings. Now, of course, here is the word Jews should be Judeans, because we have a mixed multitude here. We have Edomites, Judahites, Benjaminites and a scattered remnant of a few other tribes possibly standing around, okay, and certainly some Levites as well, okay. So there was a division, just as today we have kind of an interesting division between the Christian Zionists and other Christians who, you know, say, well, you know, why are you catering to these unbelieving Jews, you know, and there never has been a total agreement among all Christians as to what the Bible is really teaching. There never has been.
Well, no, but that's why, you know, Paul told the Corinthians that there, and I know it's translated heresies,
yeah,
but the word heresis in Greek is a sect.
Okay.
All right? There must be sects among you.
Yeah.
And in that manner, the anointed among you will be made manifest.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Very good. Yeah. And all these denominations are sects.
Well, right. Like the, and we have the Paul Bashers and the Ephraim Skeptor people. They're
right.
Jews.
Even in
and the anointed are made manifest when they don't buy into those lies.
Yeah. It will only end until when the judgment day comes. That's when all the sectarianism is going to end. Verse 20.
Well, that's because all the goats will be in a lake of fire.
That's right. Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Neither can I.
Yeah. Verse 20. And many of them said, he has a devil and is mad. Why hear you him? Okay, so of course the Jews are still saying that today. They're saying, well, he never even existed. You know, and he's a phony. He was just a man. He didn't resurrect. He didn't, he staged his death. And he faked it. Okay, verse 21. Others said, these are not the words of him that has a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind? And it was at Jerusalem, the Feast of the Dedication, and it was winter.
Now, this Feast of the Dedication, this is the only mention of the Maccabean, the Maccabees instituted that feast called Hanukkah.
Okay, right.
I hate to use that name.
Yeah.
It's the Maccabees instituted that in celebration of the reopening of the temple after the Syrians defiled.
Right.
And that was in December, which shows what time of year it is here.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Right.
And this is the
right.
only mention of that feast in the New Testament.
Yes. Yes. I forget the name of the month that occurred, the Hebrew name of it. But yes, this was a late feast. Okay. Verse 23. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Jews round about him. And I think we should say Judeans here. Then
let me say another thing about this feast, please, before you continue.
Okay.
That this is, you know, the Jews like to show that this proved that Yahshua celebrated this feast.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean it's a biblically ordained feast.
Right.
Yeah, you know, Yahshua's going after his sheep, right?
Right.
That's his purpose. He just happens to be in Jerusalem during the Feast of the Dedication, but
yeah.
That doesn't mean that we should celebrate this feast today.
Right, right. And as you said earlier, the Sabbath day was a good time for him to go among the people because they were out and about. And the same thing at any feast time, that's the time when he would go out and seek the sheep.
Right.
Okay.
And all I'm trying to is that doesn't mean that he's giving his imprimatur to this,
right.
to this feast that we should celebrate it. You know, the
right.
three feasts in the New Old Testament, they're the three that we must celebrate.
Right.
And we don't have to celebrate Hanukkah because Christ was in Jerusalem for the feast.
Right. Yeah. That's why we have Christmas. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Verse 23. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Judeans round about him and said to him, how long do you make us to doubt? I mean, he stated several times, I am he. I am the Messiah. I am come to lay down my life for this sheep. Okay. And still they ask, how long do you make us to doubt? If you be the Christ, tell us plainly. Jesus answered and said, I told you, and you believed not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me. So if these people standing in front of him had been aware of the prophecies and taken them to heart, well, then they would realize this is him. This is he. There can't
right,
be.
But even the Jews today, they treat the books of the Old Testament differently.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you know, they claim the Torah And then they have the Tanakh, you know what I mean, or the what they call the writings, which are the
yes.
Psalms and the prophets.
Right.
And they really don't. They actually, I know for a fact, and I've heard this from Jews firsthand, and troublemakers should know it,
uh-huh.
that they actually cover parts of the Old Testament with a cloth,
uh-huh.
because they refuse to read those parts.
Right. Right. Yeah. We talked about that in the Book of Daniel. That they, they totally deny the that the sacrifices and oblations shall see.
Well, right,
and
most of the messianic prophecies that they recognize, yes. they just covered them. They don't want to hear
right.
them. They don't want to
right.
see them.
And then we know many scholars have shown that the Masoretic text, which is the Jewish redaction of the Hebrew Old Testament, they deliberately deleted a lot of prophecies that pertain to Messiah. And the early Christian fathers, many of them accused the Jews of doing just that. Okay? And that's one of the reasons why the Masoretic text is so much shorter. By what? What would you say? By one-fifth?
Yeah, it is a lot shorter. A lot of the history is missing.
Uh-huh.
A lot of messianic prophecies are missing, but great chunks of historical book, chunks of chapters
yeah.
are actually missing also.
Right, right, yeah. So that's why the Septuagint is much longer than the Masoretic text. Because,
right, and it's absolutely necessary to study both.
Right, yes, I agree. And then I think Clifton Emmaheiser has shown that they try to shorten the lifespans of the Old Testament patriarchs for their own reasons, right? Again, but it was anti-Messiah. That their purpose was to demonstrate that the Messiah couldn't come, and when he did, he would have come 1,000 years later.
Well, now, right, but what's odd is that there's really no, except for the Kabbalistic beliefs of the Jews, I don't see any determination where you could count from Adam to the time of Christ.
Okay.
Yeah, but the Jews believe that there was.
Yeah.
For some reason, and they did pervert the chronology by changing the ages of the patriarchs when they had children.
Yes. Okay.
And they perverted the chronology by about 900 years,
okay.
and that's the difference in the flood date, and some of the other dates would be different also, like the time of Abraham, the promise of Abraham
uh-huh.
would be drastically different than in the Masoretic text.
Yeah, okay, okay.
And Abraham's about 2,000 B.C. in the Septuagint, and it's about 1,500 years off, I think, the time of Abraham, between the Masoretic text and the Septuagint. And for that reason, the dating of Adam by Bishop Usher was 4,001 B.C., I think.
Right.
And the dating of Adam in the Septuagint using Bishop Usher's
method
would be like 5407 B.C. or
okay.
something right around there.
So you're saying there's an actual 1,500-year difference, not just 1,000?
Well, it's 900 years in the flood date difference.
Okay.
All right? But
all
the
right.
total difference, from the time of Adam to the time
from
of Abraham
Adam.
Is about 1,500 years.
Okay.
Because some of those years are – some of those changes were made – to patriarchs' ages following the flood.
Right. Okay.
And when you look at the, Clifton, there's a couple of charts on Clifton's website that show this, that demonstrate this chronology graphically.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at the – and this is how I tell that a lot of books are spurious that were apocryphal books that claim to be very early.
Uh-huh.
And that's because some of these apocryphal books – have Abraham being born while Shem and Eber and some of these patriarchs are still alive.
Uh-huh.
Well, that is true if the Masoretic text is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
If the Masoretic chronology is correct. But it's definitely not true if the Septuagint chronology is correct.
Right.
But I have to favor the Septuagint chronology for the simple reason that we have a lot of recorded history and a lot of archaeology that the Septuagint chronology,
backs up.
The veracity of it is demonstrated.
Yeah, okay.
That these things cannot fall into place in the Masoretic
yeah.
chronology. I'm sorry.
Right.
The Bible
yeah.
turns out to be a lie.
Yeah. So we have abundant evidence that the Masoretic rabbis have been doctoring the Hebrew text in many different ways.
Well, yes, and is the oft-cited testimony of the second century writer Ephraim the Syrian.
Okay. Okay.
That it actually states it.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And then the early church fathers said it too. I don't have those quotes in front of me, but I remember reading several of them. Origen probably would be one of them that talked about the Jews doctoring the Hebrew Old Testament. Okay.
Right. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, the important prophecy in the dating of the Christ is Daniel chapter 9.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, that they don't allow that anyway. They hate the Daniel chapter 9, you know, so that's one of those that they must cover.
Oh, definitely. They definitely cover Daniel chapter 9.
Yeah. Okay.
I had an actual Messianic Jew who was a conversant of mine from time to time.
Uh-huh.
And he used to try to debate me all the time. He was a rabbinical student.
Okay.
And he could never debate with me.
Yeah.
But I did squeeze a lot of Jewish, you know, squeeze a lot of things out of him. And he fessed up to a lot of things that go on in the synagogue.
Right.
Some of it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
And that's one of
pork.
They'd actually read parts of the prophets, and they would cover parts of them.
Yeah.
With a black cloth, because they
right.
would not, they
offended.
Could not read from those parts of the prophets.
Yeah, they were offended by the scriptures, yes.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it culminates in this, verse 26. But you believe not, because you are not of my sheep, as I said to you. Let me repeat this, folks, because this can't be, maybe I should ask you if this has been mistranslated here.
Well, no, I cite this verse all the time. I love this verse because
yes.
of the way that, you know, it's
because
it's
they didn't
so
reverse
plain.
The subject and object this time.
Exactly. They didn't. But they do when they teach what it means.
Yeah, right. You're right. Yeah, exactly. But it says very clearly, folks, but you believe not because you are not of my sheep. Since they're not his sheep, they can't possibly believe. You know,
now, reading the statement, we have to look at the historical context.
Okay.
And we have to look at Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 and see that there are Judeans that are not really Judeans.
Right.
They're not really Judah.
That's right.
And we have to look at Paul in Romans 9. And see that he's actually saying that there's Edomites in Judea and there's Judahites in Judea.
Right.
And they're two different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if these things, you can't just take these things out of context and twist them into what you want them
right.
to say.
Right, yeah.
But that's what the church does.
And he confirms that the Edomites are vessels of destruction. And they, you know, that's because they're not of his sheep.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're these people that didn't believe, and that's clear in history.
Uh-huh.
It's clear in Joseph. It's clear in the other books of the New Testament.
Yes.
And there's no other explanation for him telling these people this.
Yes, yes. And verse 27, my sheep hear my voice, although imperfectly most of the time.
Well, if he was really here,
yeah,
you know, his sheep would hear his voice.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, so my sheep hear my voice. I mean, he's definitely, he's talking me, my, our, not you. He's using these pronouns, very specifically between his people and them, these scribes and Pharisees. As I said to you, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give to them eternal life, to them. He's not offering this eternal life to these Edomites. And they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand, although temporarily we may be misled. Verse 29. My Father, which gave them me, is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. Now, of course, this raises the question. Now, do any Israelites die and go into perdition, or do they are the Israelites who die in, you know, in this struggle given another chance in the kingdom? And, you know, maybe that's just a, a speculative question. But, you know, what's your thinking on this?
Well, they have no choice at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything's predetermined.
Okay.
And if you're an Israelite, you're going to, your station may not be very good in the kingdom.
Yeah.
You may not be allowed in the city.
Okay.
You might be outside the walls, like it says in Revelation chapter 22.
Okay. But even so, very similar to the blind man who was blind from birth, Yahshua Messiah also says that in the kingdom, things will be so much better that you'll forget everything that transpired before the kingdom. Okay, that's how much.
Well,
better.
I don't know if that's what it says.
Okay,
you know, because if we forget everything that transpired before the kingdom. Then there's no lesson in what life, how bad life could be in rebellion from God.
Oh, right. Well, I didn't say we'd forget. I just said it would be much better. You know?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. Without the naysayers and the Jews
right.
and the trolls and the infiltrators and all that.
Yeah, right. But in the sense, you know, because it's often the tribulations of a woman delivering a child, you know, when she's in terrible pain. And the child's about to be born, but when after the child's born, she forgets the pain, you know. Not that she doesn't remember how painful it was, you know, but she just puts it out of her mind, you know. Okay. All right, so verse 30, I and my Father are one. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. So here's another. I and my Father are one, John Hagee. How can you say that he never claimed to be God?
Well, he asserted it all the time.
Yeah, over and over again. And then, now here's where Hagee disappears. And the Jews take over. Now the word Jew is proper here. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Again, it says, because they had tried to do this several times already. Verse 32, Jesus answered, many good works have I showed you from my Father. For which of those works do you stone me? And the Jews answered him, saying, for a good work we stone you not, but for blasphemy, because that you, being a man, make yourself God. And of course, the Jews will never accept this.
Now, they understood.
Yeah.
Now, I translated a God, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's the same thing. The Jews understood what he was saying.
Yes. Absolutely.
But I translated it a God because, I'm going to explain it in my translation notes.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yeah, okay,
I don't believe they understood that he was
Yahweh.
That he was actually Yahweh.
Yeah. But so make yourself a God. In other words, they're accusing him of idolatry.
Well, yeah. Well, they know that he's putting himself on the same level.
Right.
If they don't know that he's claiming to be Yahweh himself.
Right. Okay. So
and they can't, because they don't know the scripture, they can't realize
right.
that he fulfilled
this, the prophecy.
The sayings of Isaiah. That,
right.
You know, when a man opens the eyes of the blind, the scripture has to be fulfilled.
That's right.
It's so, that simple.
Are you saying the Greek doesn't have an indefinite article, does it?
Right. The Greek has no indefinite article.
Okay, so how do you get a God? The context? What's the context?
Well, whenever you see yes, that's the context.
Okay.
And it's not, I'm not saying I'm right.
Yeah,
you know, I'm trying to read how the Jews would have understood what they were
right.
saying.
Right, exactly. Understood. Okay, very good. Verse 34, Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law? Now, it's interesting he says your law here because he obviously knows that they practice a different law from the law of Moses. But still, they have the law of Moses, too. Is it not written in your law, I said, you are gods? If he called them gods to whom the word of God came and the scripture cannot be broken. And of course, he's talking about our predestinated spiritual heritage and the end result of where we're going. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is another reason why in translation in the prior verse where he said, you make yourself a God.
Okay.
All right. And if they had, if they had meant in Greek, if they had meant a particular god,
yeah,
they should have used the definite article.
Okay. I see. Very good. Okay. All right. So, and that's that is a verse taken from the Old Testament, saying to the Israelites that we are gods. Of course.
Well, that's from the Psalms, right? Okay. I think it's 82:11 or
yeah,
something like that. I'm sorry.
So he's not just pulling this out of a hat. This is Old Testament. Okay, verse 36. Say you of him whom the Father has sanctified and sent into the world, you blaspheme, because I said I am the Son of God. Well, we Israelites are the sons and daughters of God. Okay? Well, that would make us little gods, right?
Well, that's Deuteronomy 14:1.
Okay.
All right? Ye are the children of Yahweh your God.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's explicit in Deuteronomy 14.
Right, right. You know, although we really haven't achieved that status yet.
Well, that's what that word adoption really means.
Okay.
That word adoption really means
uh-huh.
the position of a son.
Okay.
It doesn't mean adoption
right.
as a son.
Yeah.
We are already the children of God.
Right.
Okay? And we have the opportunity to earn
yeah.
or gain well, the position of
yeah.
the children of God through our faith in
right,
God.
Which Adam and Eve lost for us. Yeah.
Well, right. You could be a son and not be mentioned in the will.
Yeah.
And not having a part in the inheritance, you really don't have a seat at the table, so to
yeah.
speak.
Right, right. You have to be a predestinated heir in order to have a seat at the table. Okay, yeah. Brett says Psalms 82:6. Okay.
Yeah, I was only five verses off. I was trying to look for it as we were talking just
yeah,
now,
right.
but I had a bug in my throat, too,
yeah,
and I'm muting
yeah, right.
the phone and coughing. And
right.
I'm having a hard time tonight. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but let's continue here. If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. Okay, so again, he asks him, you know, well, what have I done wrong? You know, I'm fulfilling all these scriptures. I'm curing people's ailments. I'm telling you, I am the Son of God.
And he proved all the time they didn't know the scriptures.
That's
so they
right.
They didn't have a basis for realizing
yeah.
any of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so they claimed, of course, to be experts, but they didn't know. Verse 38, but and then we've got the same situation today with Judeo-Christians, don't we? They claim to be experts. They have the same Bible we do.
And I don't know how they could claim to be experts and throw out the Old Testament.
Right, right, exactly. So they're very much like Pharisees, aren't they?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's they're dictatorial,
right.
and it's their way or the highway in most instances.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of them won't ever...
No,
open their eyes to
yeah.
to seek.
They won't even open up the Old Testament, many of these New Testament Christians, yes. But if I do, though you believe not me, but believe the works, that you may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him. So, you know, you see these miracles and all these wondrous works that I'm doing and all the knowledge I'm presenting before you, and still you do not believe. Verse 39. Therefore, they sought again to take him, but he escaped out of their hand and went away again beyond Jordan into the place where John at first baptized, and there he abode. In other words, he stayed away from the Jews because they were always trying to kill him, as we found out in John 7:1. Verse 41, and many resorted to him and said, John did no miracle. But all things that John spoke of this man were true, and many believed on him there. Okay? So, underline the word many, not all. Okay? And, of course, this word belief here is a very, very loaded word. It just doesn't mean merely that I believe in Jesus. Believed on him, they understood that he fulfilled these prophecies. Okay? I don't think there's too many Judeo-Christians today who know enough history and know the Old Testament enough that he fulfilled any of these prophecies, right? They may have a vague idea of it, but their ministers are talking about these things.
Well, right, and in 1 Timothy, Paul states that he pretty much defines the faith of Christ. where he states that if anyone teaches differently and does not capitulate to sound words, those of our Prince Joshua Christ.
Yes.
And that, you know, to his words, not just to the idea and
right,
to his name.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, oh, I believe in Jesus. I'm saved.
Yeah.
Well, what did he say? Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter. I believe in him.
Well, Paul,
you know, that's the Judeo-Christian attitude.
Right. Yeah. Paul also says he's our example. And, you know, if he's an example, that means we just don't sit. We don't sit and watch. Okay. Guest 30 says, guess Jesus is staying away from the Jews as an example for us. Exactly. That's what we should be doing. That's what we should be doing. We should be staying away from them. And that's what the book of Revelation means when it says, come out of Babylon. Be not partakers of her plagues. So if our people would have enough sense to simply stay away from the Jews, aren't we supposed to create our own society independent of the Jews and just keep them out of our company? We're not to allow them into our company. Isn't that what the Bible's telling us?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yet here we have modern Judeo-Christians inviting them in, inviting the snakes in.
I wrote a paper, should Christians embrace the Jews?
Uh-huh.
It quotes all the scripture that Christians should not have anything to do with the Jews.
Yes. But now, look, this is the modern world, Bill. you step outside your door. And you have to deal with the world that the Jews have created for us. You know, whether it's money lending, whether it's the money in your pocket, you know, in your wallet, the television you watch, the radio you listen to, you turn around and everything is Jew. You can't get away from them. So what do we do?
Well, what do we do is we accept the gospel and hate the world.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's what we do. That's the only
crazy,
option.
That's crazy, Bill. That's crazy. Hate the world.
Accept the gospel and hate the world.
That's right.
That's what Christians have to do.
That's what we have to do.
Because the world hates him.
That's right. The world hates him. They hate us, too. And it's only going through the motions of pretending to love us, as the white Christians in South Africa are finding out. Right?
Absolutely.
And the Christian Zionists are going to find out, too, that the Jews don't really love them. And, you know, and all of that, all the TV shows they watch with the televangelists are nothing but lies. They're being lied to and they're being exploited and used. So, I have to take a break here. So, Bill, thank you for joining me again. We are finishing up with John chapter 10. And next, now next week, let's see, you're going to be gone, right, for the whole weekend?
Yes, I'll be gone the entire weekend next week.
Okay.
I might do my my Monday forum call.
Oh, okay.
All right, and I'm going to do the Euro Fellowship call on Thursday, and I'm going to do it early.
Okay.
It'll probably be at noon Eastern time.
Yes.
And as soon as that's over, I'm heading out of town.
Okay. So for next weekend, I've scheduled Greg Howard, and we're going to be talking about the Book of Enoch and comparing the prophecies of Enoch with the Book of Revelation and Daniel, et cetera, okay? And that's what we're going to do both nights, Friday and Saturday. So
excellent.
Both those nights covered.
I'm going to miss it. I need a weekend off from talking.
Yeah, you do. you're getting hoarse. But tomorrow, you will be on. I will be gone tomorrow because I have an Illinois white nationalist event to attend. And so what are you going to be doing tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow I think I'm going to do I'm going to be alone and I'm going to talk about a series of topics.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about baptism.
Okay.
I think, and I'm going to talk about, I might talk about the marriage relationship with Judah and Israel.
Uh-huh. Okay. Sounds interesting.
And I'm not going to let any trolls have any voice in the forum tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. The forum was pretty well behaved tonight. And so, you know, we're looking forward to tomorrow and Sunday. I'm going to try to talk about. In fact, I will. Sunday, I will be talking about the funny money that is bankrupting America, and I'm going to be talking about what real, honest money is and why we don't have it. Okay, so that's going to be my subject for Sunday. And then a week from Sunday, Troublemaker and I are going to have our discussion about Joseph's scepter and whether or not Judah is all of the descendants of Judah are bastards or real Israelites. Okay.
Well, you'd probably be better off with Simon Wiesenthal instead of
right.
or Abe Foxman or somebody.
Yeah, okay, Troublemaker. He's in the forum, so he's here and he knows, but he understands. Okay, so we're going to have that debate that's still on schedule for a week from Sunday. So that should be a lot of fun. Okay. All right. So again, Bill, thank you very much. This is a very, very enlightening two chapters we did from the Gospel of John. Thank you very much, and Yahweh bless all you for listening. Thank you, and praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.